Okay. So this is our final week in this first session. We're going to have a week's break and then we'll continue with session two. I'll remind you again that you have to register separately for session two and you have to pay. So I hope that works out for people. Let's see. Okay. Somebody asked me, Lee asked me, which operating system I'm using. Windows 10. I assume you have some excellent reason for asking that question. Okay. Oh, sound is usually no. He was wondering about, did I know how to turn up the sound? But I definitely have it turned up. I don't actually have it turned up all the way, I think. Here. I am. Okay. Well, I now have it turned up to the maximum. So if it's painful to your ears, you have to adjust the volume down, I guess. It's one thing to say the transitions are clear and crisp. It's another thing to say that they're loud, that I'm loud. That's not my intention. Okay. So let's see. So we'll start up again next week. No session, and the week after that, or no class, and the week after that, week one of the second session. The second session very much builds on the first. I mean, I actually would say that the first session, the one we're in right now, is a preparation for the second. It stands on its own. I trust that it stands on its own, but I also see it as a preparation for the second. Okay, I'll say some things at the end about I'm actually going to post a reading, maybe a few readings on the website for this period in between. And I'll say something about that at the end. So I want to start with a review. The reason that I keep reviewing, sometimes in writing and sometimes when we start, is because we really are moving. I mean, the way I see what we're doing here is that we're there's a structure to it. We're moving systematically. Systems may be a little too strong, but I do want to keep reminding people of where we started, where we've been, and where we're going, because I think it builds. That's my thought. For those of you who are familiar with the TSK books, which is most of you, the first TSK book is like that. Is very much it builds, and if you look at how it's written, it's always kind of moving back and forth and reminding you and. So kind of like that. Okay, so the starting point is to say that our ordinary understanding of space is way too limited, and that has negative consequences for how we live our lives and experience our lives. The way to describe that, or one way, is to say that we have we are not in touch with space. And actually, in touch is a nice way to say it, because embodiment, our embodiment is very important there. Space really is just kind of a concept. It's empty, right? It's blank. There's nothing interesting about space. It's a container for what's real. So everything we care about, at least in the physical world, in our ordinary understanding, everything we care about shows up in space, but we don't care about space. It's just the enabler. It's a little bit, I guess, since Lee mentioned operating systems, it's a little bit like the operating system, or a computer in general. You turn the computer on, and hopefully everything works, and then all the interesting stuff happens. Then you write and you watch and so on. You don't care about the operating system, except around the edges. So space is a little bit like that, not a perfect analogy. There's nothing to it. We don't care about it. So we started with the idea of reversing that. I mean, our intention, in effect, is to reverse that and then or to question that and then see what the consequences are. So we started with the just the simple possibility, the practice of appreciating space. So it's a kind of a shift, and I won't say more about it now. We've been working with that, but the idea is to say, well, wait, maybe space isn't just a blank. Maybe it isn't totally uninteresting. Maybe, you know, the quality of space that lets us allows appearance, we can kind of contact that. We can appreciate it. So it's not, we don't perceive space, but we can appreciate space. So as we do that, you know, the possibility arises that we can really engage space differently. And the way that we engage space differently is by inhabiting space. That's the word that I've been using. I don't think it's used in this way in the TSK books, but I could be wrong. I haven't actually looked. I did look up how the word inhabit, but it's not a technical term, certainly, in the TSK books. It's not a TSK term, but I think it's a helpful term. There are other ways you could talk about it, but I think it's good. So how do we inhabit space? And what's the difference? The difference is that we don't occupy space, because in the usual model, things occupy space, or physical body occupies space, but all the different physical things occupy space. This is not that. It's a different possibility. It's not quite the opposite of occupying, but occupying doesn't go as far as inhabiting. When we can inhabit space, then we can connect with our own aliveness in a different way. And that's kind of what we've been exploring. So to inhabit space, you challenge the view that says that here I am, the bystander, and there something is that I see. So we get a subject and object structure. And that structure is completely connected with the idea that space disappears. Space is just the distance between that separates me from the object, and it's not it's boring. That's not a technical TSK term either, but something like that. There's nothing there to get involved with. So that subject object structure in which space has just disappeared, and that is a term that gets used in some of the TSK books. That's what we've been challenging. So one of the ways that we do that, we started with the idea that we can just inhabit the world more fully. We can inhabit our own embodiment more fully. And we did that with working with the breath, and we'll do another practice with the breath today. And just our sense of being present in space, being fully present in space. And we also looked at that in terms of the senses. So again, our ordinary model is that I look out and see an object. So sense perception consists of seeing something out there. Somebody sees something. That's sense perception. That's our ordinary understanding of what goes on. And what we looked at was instead to focus on not so much the one who sees and what's seen, but the activity of seeing. When we look at the activity of seeing, then we realize that it pervades space. When we're seeing something, and again, we'll look at this, we'll do a practice in a few minutes that brings this in. When we see, so I guess I'll try to avoid saying that there's one somebody who sees, like when we see. I'll say in the activity of seeing, it's something like the it's breathing that we talked about several weeks ago, right? There's just a seeing. And the seeing involves the sense of a seer and the sense of something that's seen. But it's a pervasive activity. It pervades space. And that term pervasion is really, I think, is important. You know, we'll get a chance to look at that again, too. So you say, yeah, okay, but there are objects, right? There are things. There's this table that I can touch and so on. And you say, yeah, that's true. But it's also true on the level of concept or theory. If I take my finger and tap this table, it's this desk, I say, okay, here I am, here's my finger, here's the desk, they're contacting each other. That's a perfectly good story. There's no reason to have to come up with some other story for what's going on. But it is a kind of an interpretation, an overlay on the immediate experience. And the same thing is true when we see, you know, we describe what's going on by saying that there's an object out there and I'm seeing it. And that's fine. But the seeing has nothing to do with that. The sense of an object and the subject are added on. And we can challenge those structures. And it's not that we have to challenge them by making them go away, by telling some different story. It's just that we don't have to accept the idea that, we don't have to accept somebody's being noisy. There's something to be done about that, Kathleen? Okay. Okay, that seems better. Well, spoke too soon. Well, I think it's probably okay. Okay, so what we can challenge is the sense or the claim that that's what's going on, that that's the truth of the situation. From this perspective, when we inhabit space, we can say, no, the truth of the situation is that there's seeing going on. And then there's also an explanation of or an account that we give of what's going on. And it's the, you know, there's the clock over there, and here I am seeing it. Okay, fine. That's a different layer, and that is actually pretty much what I want to talk about today. Is this idea of layers or multidimensionality. So let me say something about multidimensionality, and then we'll start to do we'll do a practice to kind of investigate it. So the basic idea is very simple. It's that space allows physical stuff, clocks and bodies, my body, all of that embodied dimension is one dimension of space. But there are other dimensions of space going on as well. And we saw that when we looked at distance, for instance, or you can also say it with respect to seeing. When you see, there is the mental dimension, which is the kind of seeing capacity, right? And the physical dimension, you could say, which is the whatever it is you're seeing, they're not separate from each other. They're both going on. They're both active. And so multidimensionality is a way of talking about that. It just says space has these different dimensions. There's the physical dimension and there's the mental dimension. or when we talked about distance, and last week we experimented with this, you say, you know, we tend to think of distance as a physical, you know, it's kind of a synonym for space, actually, in the ordinary physical sense. We say distance is a physical reality, you know, 2 feet between me and the wall or whatever it is. But distance also has a mental dimension to it. A dimension in which I'm being distracted a little by the sounds. A dimension in which the sense of distance is, you know, there is a sense of distance in addition to a physical distance, right? And we talked about that last week in terms of the distance that we feel from someone. We feel close to someone, we feel distant from someone, those kinds of things, those parts of our experience. And those are also a dimension of space experience. And we experimented with that last week in terms of looking at an object and instead of saying it's distant from us, saying, no, we're connected to it. And you know, we are because we take it in. So that's a dimension of space, the dimension, you could say, of distance and separation and closeness. All of that is not just a physical dimension. So there are, when you ask, well, what dimensions of space are there? The answer is as many dimensions as there are to human being. So there is a feeling dimension, you know, the way, so here I am in space, I'm hesitating to use that, but I think it's okay. So what does that mean? Well, it means that I'm physically situated, but it also means that I have a feeling relationship to what's going on around me and what's going on, for that matter, internally. And it means I may have a conceptual space. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Mental, emotional, physical, sensory. Those are all spaces. And the way I'm talking about it now, and I think it's helpful to do this, is that those are all dimensions of space. So we can inhabit space in a multidimensional way. And when we do, things change very fundamentally, really. So at any given moment, and let me just give one example. We won't go into this so much now, but later or in the next session, there are also completely different kinds of spaces, right? If we get lost in a thought or a daydream, or if we're dreaming at night, we're still inhabiting space. We're inhabiting the space of the dream. That's the easiest one to see. So the possibility for inhabiting involves all these different dimensions and also the possibility of shifting between different kinds of spaces. But today we want to really look at this idea of inhabiting multiple dimensions. So let's do a practice. And it essentially will be a practice that is meant to introduce this idea. And let's start with seeing. So let yourself be aware of, and let's just do this. I'll describe it as we go along because there are a few steps in it. So to start, just let yourself see. And I'm saying that in terms of, you know, somebody is seeing. And again, that's an okay description. But really, we want to focus on the activity of seeing. So in the activity of seeing, there is a sense of self and there is a sense of what's seen. But they all come together. And there really isn't any there isn't any separation. There's this sense that seeing is pervades the whole of space, as long as what you're focused on is in fact seeing. So let's just do that for a couple of minutes. So what matters in this practice is the sense, really, that the seeing is engaging the whole of space, or is permeating the whole of space. And that, of course, is very different from our usual experience. Now, let's add to that a different activity, and that activity is breathing. So these are things we've worked with. So let yourself be aware of the activity of breathing. And you may want to take a moment to stabilize your sense of that. Just focus on the breath, or on the breathing, I should say. But when you have that connection to breathing, then do both at once. So you're breathing and you're seeing, which of course we do all the time. you're breathing and you're seeing, and there is a sense, the sense that we want to explore here is that there's no separation between the two. You're being active in both of those dimensions of space or experience, space experience at once. So the seeing breathes, the breathing sees. They're both going on together. Let's try that. Okay, now let's add one more dimension. So we have a kind of breathing full seeing and a seeing full breathing. Let's add in the dimension of feeling. Whatever you're feeling, there's that same sense that the feeling is a dimension of space. That your feeling pervades space. The seeing pervades space. The breathing pervades space. Whatever you're feeling pervades space. And they're all going on together, or they're kind of interpenetrating. They're different dimensions, but they're all available. They don't conflict with each other. It's not that you can only do one at a time. They're all dimensions of space experience. So let's try that. Okay, let's stop there. So we had some distractions, which may have generated some feelings, or may have generated some hearing. I don't know if that is something people would like to comment on or not. Okay, so here we have some comment. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry, Sudhi, you made a comment. You commented several quite a while ago, and I missed it. I didn't see it. Let me bring it in now. You said this is for me tied in, and I don't know what the this because I lost the context to dependent arising of objects and persons and self. So dependent arising is a concept in Buddhism. And we don't need to go into what it is, but yeah, I think that's one way to talk about this. The wholeness of the space field. We'll be talking about fields much more next in the next session. Yes, everything arises together, and certainly you can see that just in a simple activity like seeing. Okay, I won't try to comment more on that right now. David said, yeah. Okay, go ahead, Ken. Yes. Yes. Right. Everything is. No, I think that's good, and I'm going to repeat it a little because, again, I still haven't figured out how the recording can get your voices. So basically, you're saying instead of describing it as an arising together, you could describe it as an allowing together. Everything is allowed. Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, the title that I gave to this course was Given Together. Another term that's used in TSK, right? Everything is given together. And given is a nice word because it has this suggestion of a gift. But even with it. Yeah, allowed does seem more like it's space. You're right. Yeah, I won't. That's right. So allowing is the right word here, I think. So the words that we tend to use for space are allowing and accommodating. But allowing, yeah, that's good. That's fine. Okay. So David says, I think in with respect, yeah, to the practice here, I feel myself here as a context of touch. And see a context of a visual field out there, and also a listening context, together with all the other sense dimensions. And then there's the thinking dimension. Breathing seems to turn it all into space, transparent bubbles of interacting contexts, more spacious, open, and breezy. Yeah, breathing is breezy. Well, it is true. I think that the best way, not in every context, not for everybody, you know, you can't make those statements, but it seems like a very effective way to develop this sense of really inhabiting the whole of space is through the body and through the breath. That's kind of where it's most natural to go. But in fact, once you realize these other dimensions, and you're saying contexts, David, once you realize these other contexts are operating, in some ways, they naturally pervade the whole of space. So if you talk about feeling, for instance, let's say you say, I feel calm. That sense of calm is everywhere, you know? When you see, it's a calm seeing. And when you think, a little trickier, it's a calm thinking. And you know, when you feel in a more physical sense, you feel an itch, let's say, even though itches are kind of agitating by nature, still there's a calmness, if in fact you're feeling calm. So there are dimensions of space experience that are naturally pervasive. And in part, what we've been doing in the last few weeks is trying to bring that possibility for pervasion into the kinds of activities, human activities, that we don't think of as pervasive, you know, that we think of in subject and object terms, so that things are located and they're separated and they're at a distance. But there are parts of our experience where the space dimension is just naturally pervasive. So, okay. Okay, Eliana says, it seems to me that space is connected to awareness. And the more focuses are brought into it, the more it opens. And experience feels more spacious. Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. Awareness, you know, none of this makes any sense without awareness. And So when we see something, that's, you could say, a form of awareness. And when we feel something, that's a form of awareness. And if we weren't aware, if we were sleeping, none of this would even come up. Now there's an intermediate possibility, and this is something that I'm still thinking about or exploring, and that is that a lot of the time we're aware, but we're not aware in a, how can I say that? You could say that we're paying attention or we have a focus, but we're not really aware in any kind of fruitful way. So, if I'm walking down the street, I'm noticing, we're noticing what's going on, and that's a kind of an awareness. But we don't appreciate the quality of space. So we don't appreciate the quality of awareness. So it may be that bringing in the space quality is a way of going to this deeper kind of awareness. Right? An awareness in which we're really attuned to what's going on. And that kind of makes sense because, part of what we're saying is that we're everywhere. Our experience is without limits. It's limited in the sense that, we can see and we can hear, but we don't have radar like bats, for instance. But within the range of our experience, there are no limits. And tuning into space is a way of recognizing that, of engaging it. Okay, Ken says, with awareness, I think you're commenting on Eliana, right? So Eliana said, the more you bring into space, the more different points of focus, the more it opens, and then experience feels more spacious. And Ken says, yes, spacious and lively. And so, yeah, that's another nice word. Anything having to do with lively or alive, because the way we think of space ordinarily is dead. Nothing alive in it. But if we inhabit space, then inhabited space is inherently alive. Right? Because we're fully present. And that's what it means to be alive. Okay. Michael says, evading is the act of a subject who doesn't want to be here. Invading is the, okay, that's nice. Invading is the act of a subject who wants to acquire. But pervading is too widespread for the subject to insist on its centrality. Yeah, that's very nice. I like that. I don't know what the vade root means. Maybe somebody could look that up. But it's very nice. Yeah. We have different ways of situating ourselves or being. And you're right, the pervasive side is kind of a challenge to the self. We're gonna do a practice. I think we'll have time to do it for at least a couple of minutes. That kind of looks at that. I wanted to give an example because I think it's a helpful example of this idea of multidimensionality. And then we'll go on and do a practice. The example comes from something I read years ago, and it was a book actually on organizational theory or management or something like that, by a woman named Margaret Wheatley. And she gives an example. I'm going to use her example, but give it a very different spin, you could say. And some of you may have heard this before. I might have used it before. But she talks about somebody who's walking along and sees three people laying bricks, let's say. I'll just call it that. And so he asks the first person what he's doing, and he says, "I'm laying bricks." And then he goes along, sees someone else doing the same thing, and he says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm building a wall." And then he sees the third person and asks, and that person says, "I'm building a cathedral." And she uses that as an example of how, you know, the first person is not happy in that activity, because it seems so routine and mundane. The second person can bring in the quality of pride and craft, you know, building a wall. And then the third person has this inspiring vision of the cathedral. So she prioritizes those. And that makes sense. That makes sense why you'd say one is better, you could say, than the other. But what I would say is that it's just a great example of multidimensionality, because, in fact, all three are going on at once. And they can all be very rich and full, right? The person who's laying bricks may be very much in contact with the felt sense of the materials, you know, the mortar and the brick and lining them up perfectly and all. And well, I won't go on further with that because then I'm going to take more time. But it's just an example. And this example happens on a level we haven't talked about yet, which is the level of meaning, because we're always engaging the world as having a certain meaning. Right? So there's the emotional dimension, the feeling dimension, the physical dimension, the thinking dimension. Maybe meaning tends to come in with thinking, but we don't need to worry about that right now. But there's a meaning dimension for sure. You know, we make sense out of what's going on. So that's another dimension. And the example from Margaret Wheatley suggests that, you know, that too is multidimensional. So even within the meaning dimension, there may be several things going on at once, several meanings that are operating at once. So the aim here is to explore the possibility of inhabiting space multidimensionally. And space allows that. The visionary point, that is the point of the TSK vision with regard to space in this context, is that space does allow all these different dimensions, and they can all be active at the same time. And the practice point is that we can really engage those dimensions. So, you know, if we're feeling something, you can say, "I feel calm" or "I feel angry." And that's very much the same model as, it isn't the same, but it's similar to, you know, "I see a cat. I feel angry. I see a cat." And it's got this subject, it's a little bit different from a subject-object structure. That's why, because, you know, anger is all about me, you know, it's not, I mean, yes, we can say "I feel angry at," that's a different aspect. But when we allow for the multidimensionality, then space is pervaded with the feeling, right? Or the space that we inhabit, because we're talking about inhabiting space, the space that we inhabit is a space that's full of feeling, right? It may be an angry feeling. It may be that the feeling is again, like in the Margaret Wheatley example, maybe there are many dimensions to what we're feeling. But typically there's going to be one that's central, right? I feel restless. I feel confused. I feel that all those possibilities are there. So, but they all, the point is that they pervade the space that we inhabit. The feeling is not subjective. Our tendency is to say, yeah, when I feel something or when I think something, that's going on subjectively. You could say the bystander has its own space. And so, the bystander has these subjective feelings. But when we look at space in this way, we're saying that it's the feeling along with the seeing, along with whatever else is going on in our experience, all of that pervades the whole of space. It's not subjective. It's not objective. Those distinctions fall away. Right? It's just a kind of being in the world, being fully present. And a lot of that comes from the heart. I guess let's do a practice. Let's do a little bit there. Let's do a practice with the heart. So the idea here is that if you inhabit space, or let's say in order to inhabit space fully, we talked about embodiment as a way of inhabiting space fully. So now let's add to that the sense of inhabiting in a heartfelt or heartful way. Right? Just letting yourself inhabit the whole of space, centering centering in the heart. I can say that, but I want to say more like the whole of the space that you inhabit is heartfelt space. Okay. Space is our friend. let's try that. Okay, let's do that for just a couple of minutes. We only have a couple of minutes. Okay, I'm going to stop there just because we're out of time. Again, the idea is that a heartfelt inhabiting is also open to all the other dimensions of space. In fact, the more heartfelt it is, the more dimensions of space are available to us, really. So that's something to explore. Over the next couple of weeks, you could go back and you could practice with that. There were a couple of comments that I missed. Michael has a question for Ken about how he writes poetry, so I'll skip that one. Lee says, I felt the breathing, seeing, and feeling not so much as my experience, more like I was a participant in the experience, as were the field and perceived objects and feelings. Yeah, that's good. That's a natural way of experiencing what we're talking about here. Okay, now, in the next 2 weeks, if you feel like going into it, there are a couple of exercises in dynamics of time and space that are very related to these themes we've been exploring. They also introduce some other elements that are different from what we've been exploring, but I think if you read them, it might give you a slightly different perspective on what we've been doing. And those are exercises 9 and 10. In dynamics of time and space. They both have to do with space. So you could look at those. I'll put that. I'll write a kind of transition. If you're not going on, then it's not a trade. It's a transition out, but but you can still look at it. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I'm going to post at least one article on the website. It's by a man named Charles Musser. And it's about the field, about the relationship between the field and the objects that show up in the field from the point of view of quantum physics. And I don't usually like to make connections with the science so much, partly because science changes, you know. Next year there'll be a different theory. But I do think that the theory of the field theory, quantum field theory, is helpful in orienting us toward the possibility of not getting caught up in the idea of objects in space. So it's a comment, you could say, on what we've been doing, but it will also prepare for the next session, because we'll start off the next session by talking, by really going into this issue of space multidimensionality and inhabiting space fully in terms of a field. And some of you will, well, the whole article that we've been reading, we haven't really touched on it very much during these last 6 weeks, but the article in or the essay in Inside Knowledge called Space Field, I think we did talk about the first two or three paragraphs. And then at that point it says, you could look at what appears, or you could understand this more in terms of a field. So if you go back and read the essay again and then take a look at the Musser article, that might be helpful. The other two articles, I have two other articles I may post. I haven't quite decided yet, that are similar. But the Musser is the most accessible. It's very easy to get the point, but and very clear. The other two articles are, as I say, a little more detailed. So think of them as optional. But take a look at the Musser if you can. Take a look at exercises 9 and 10. And I'll see some of you, most of you, in a couple of weeks.